Welcome back, college basketball fans, to another edition of the Hoops HD Report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by up here, we've got David Griggs and John Stalica. Down below me, Rocco Miller and John Tytel. We might have Joby Fortson. He's running a little late. He might be jumping in here as well. We'll bring him in when he gets on. But this is the podcast where we go over all the news and notes about anything and everything that's going on in college basketball.
Well, everything is not under the radar.
Well, yeah, if you want to go under the radar, you have to go to our Under the Radar podcast.
Yeah, you have to go to that one. Yeah,
so. But I wanted to start today off, instead of going straight into the conferences and the results and the upcoming games and all that, I wanted to start tonight off actually with another blind resume. We did this last week. I want to throw another one up here, so if, give me 2 seconds. It should be coming up on the screen in about half a second here. Without trying to really guess what teams these are, I just want to ask the very general question of when
it's
you
impossible
look at the,
to not guess which teams these are.
Well, when you look at the two resumes, the one on the left versus the one on the right, Rocco, let me start with you on this actually. You know, when you look at these two resumes, do you have one that I think one stands out as being way better than the other, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you've got it's interesting.
I know who the one on the right is, and I'm not trying to guess.
David, I wasn't asking you.
Yeah,
I think without knowing who it is, in general, you've got one loaded with great wins on the left, definitely better wins, but one on the right has virtually no bad losses.
But do you really have great wins? I mean, they're 58 and higher wins versus a number 16 team in the nation on the road win on the right there.
That's true. I overlooked the numbers. I think it's close. I think I know who one of these teams are, but I would say I'll go with the team on the right just because losing at home to 16 and 25 is not a killer, or 14.
Right, but if you look also
at the ones that are away from home.
And so. The team on the left, when you look at their losses, of their losses, I believe 6 out of the 8 losses are to teams ranked number 45 or lower in the net. You only have one loss to 45 or lower on the right here. So I think the losses are a lot worse on the left.
I know who both of them are now.
Tytel, let me ask you, do you agree with Rocco or would you go with the team on the left?
I think this is one of your best ones yet. So I
Thank
think
you.
That two of the things I focus on are strength of schedule, which is better on the right, and home court hero, which means you're better on the left because the home court hero is the one on the right. But I think it's kind of a coin flip. I think this is an excellent one.
Well, I don't know, if you go overall, though, you're road and neutral. You're 4-4 on the left, 4-5 on the right. So it's if you include the neutral, it's not that far off. If you go true road, yeah, it's better.
Yeah, the one.
Let's go ahead and reveal this. On the
Stalica
left.
Stalica knows who it is. Stalica knows who it is.
I know who the team on the left is now.
The team on the left is the Syracuse Orange who people were putting in the tournament as of not that long ago. The team on the right is Xavier team that almost everybody had written off until Stalica, your team. The Musketeers went and won at Seton Hall over the weekend. Really changed that profile, didn't it?
Oh, yes. That was a major game changer because Xavier wasn't even getting so much minor victories as, let's say, one lottery ticket that they were able to cash in right here, because up until then, the best you could say was, okay, they won against TCU on the road, which had been, I think, their best overall performance. And then Saturday, after getting off to a bunch of slow starts in their past several games, they blew Seton Hall out of the water right away with a 30-4 run, never allowed the Pirates any second chance points, and got a desperately needed win away from home.
Yeah, and David, I'm going to pull Texas Tech up on the left because I think what Xavier did this week is kind of what Texas Tech did last week. You suddenly put that big win on there that turns a very mediocre profile to a very strong profile. Didn't they do the same thing?
Probably even more so. Winning at Seton Hall is – West Virginia is good, but when you go to Seton Hall and beat them, I think that's a little better than beating West Virginia at home. The other thing is that, beating Louisville on a neutral floor is way better than beating TCU even in a true road game.
Well, yeah, I'm not really comparing the two profiles. I just wanted to
– Yeah.
The analogy.
But for your analogy, yeah. I think Xavier went from very NIT-ish – If that, I mean, look at them without the Seton Hall win. They've beaten some NIT teams at home, and that's really all they've done to, wow, this team is on the bubble or maybe even inside of it.
Well, they got to keep winning, obviously, but we're going to go to the standings now. And for some reason, the SEC is here. That's not where I want to start. I want to start with the ACC.
Well, then why'd you put the SEC up there?
I don't know. But
you wanted the ACC.
You should put the ACC.
Should have put the ACC up there.
We were just speaking about that Syracuse team and Tytel, that while they had been getting a little bit better, and you can't really fault them for the loss to Duke, but that loss last week to Clemson was really something they did not need to do.
I'll speak at length about Clemson later on, but yes, okay. They had it in their grasp and then just choked it away. I think that Florida State is also a big question mark just because their numbers are great, and they obviously had a close win tonight, which did make the screen, I'm glad to see, but tough sledding. I mean, losing to Virginia any year is not a bad thing, but this year it's actually, like, questionable, wouldn't you say?
I would agree it's questionable, although kind of like by losing to Virginia, they made Virginia better, so it's not as bad of a loss, right?
Very circular logic there. That was
But Rocco, also in this conference, North Carolina, we thought maybe they got Cole Anthony back over the weekend, but didn't really help this team.
I think it's helped. They're a little bit more competitive, but obviously losing at home to BC in his first game back is tough. It just puts them even further behind the eight ball. Would have been a big boost to get a win tonight. They couldn't get it done. I think they're going to slowly continue to improve. You see a lot of guys across the country coming back from big injuries. Cole Anthony, no exception here. It takes a while to get back in the flow and get in the rhythm of the offense and just get your legs back. I still think it's a dangerous team. I don't know if there's a path to get back to the tournament unless they get the auto bid, but I think there's going to be some exciting games that they'll be a part of in February and March.
But I think the other question that may arise from North Carolina is, what are the odds that they could potentially win 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament?
And they're going to have to go that path because there's a good chance that they're going to be played. I mean, they may be the sixth. Isn't it 6 rounds the whole tournament, or is it just 5?
No, it's 5. But like Stalica brings up a good point. While they probably can't get inside the bubble, are they good enough to at least get to the second opening round or what? The round before the quarters.
Yeah, they'll have to get to
Georgia
number 9.
Tech is. Yeah. But yeah. Since Georgia Tech is ineligible this year, only the bottom 4 teams, I think, are going to have to play the Tuesday game this year.
We are keeping a little bit of an asterisk on that Georgia Tech. Their appeal has not yet been decided. They did appeal the postseason ban, but it's not promising that way. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in the ACC, because this is a big week for ACC fans, because we've got the huge, huge game coming up Saturday. David, of course, I'm talking Virginia at Louisville, which really
Virginia at Louisville, really, really big game. Louisville, a team that's actually might be gunning for the one line, probably easily a protected seed, in Virginia trying to stay safely inside the bubble.
I wouldn't call them safely inside the bubble. I think they would if they win that game.
That's what I meant. Yeah, like, if they win that game, I think they're safely inside.
Let me make one small correction here, because we do have the real Super Bowl coming on Saturday, and, of course, that is Miami and Florida State.
But we also, of course, it's a big week for Duke. I'm not really including the trip to Boston College, but next Monday night hosting Florida State in a huge game. But before that, 2 days before that, they've got to go and play their big rivalry game at North Carolina. May not quite be the game we've seen in recent years, though.
It's a road game. it's a road game, and the tradition and history of this, ESPN used to dedicate an entire week to it, known as Rivalry Week. We're running a little low on rivalries these days, so it's hard to fill out an entire week, but still probably the most recognizable rivalry in all of college sports, maybe all of American sports.
David,
the nastiest one, but not the biggest.
I'm going to jump in here because we want to debut something brand new here at Hoops HD.
I'm excited about
North
this.
North Carolina. We have our brand new HoopsHD.com rivalry checker.
This is
for any
stuff.
Rivals, we can now find out exactly how many miles the two teams are apart and exactly how many times they've met in the NCAA tournament.
So let's check this out here.
This is a big rivalry, Duke and North Carolina.
Right. And
here's the result.
Yeah, there it is on the screen. And how do you –
Eight miles apart, and they've never met in the NCAA tournament.
That is good. And I mean, we worked, Chad. I normally don't like paying you compliments, but I know everything you went through to put this together. The Hoops HD rival, and it works for any rivalry. We can check some other ones later.
We may check back in on it later on some other rivalries, but for now,
Duke and North Carolina. So they really are just 8 miles apart. I think we MapQuested that last year, didn't we? They really are. So it works.
let's move over to the Big Ten, which had as it will have as it has had and will have all season, had a lot of good games over the course of the week. And I don't even know where to start, but Tytel, let me bring you in here. Where do you even start with this week in the Big Ten?
We're going to start on Saturday with a ginormous win by the Badgers over Sparty. My brother-in-law is a Badger, so I made sure to check in with him, and he said that it was not as close as the final score indicated because Cassius Winston hit a couple late threes, but huge win for the Badgers. This is the kind of win that could make the difference between bubble and no bubble, in my opinion.
I'd agree. That was a big win for the Badgers.
Very much agree.
And Rocco, Maryland had a real good win over Iowa as well.
They did, yeah, and I think the theme here in the conference is it's just been heavily weighted towards the home teams is protecting home court, and this last week no different. I don't have the current stat, but I know it's probably north of 80% at this point, and I think it's just leaving a little bit to be desired on the resumes to get wins away from home. Obviously, Chad, you can attest to that. Your hometown Rutgers team only has a win at Nebraska. There's many examples of this in the league where there's a very low shortage, I think Maryland themselves, of getting big road wins in the conference. So it'd be really interesting to see if that trend can continue, or if it changes, it's going to really impact these resumes. But I think right now teams are just holding serve.
Yeah, just look at it. Only three teams won on the road in conference this past week. They were two wins at Nebraska and one win at Northwestern. I mean, that just tells you.
So there's no separation when that happens.
Right. And I agree with Rocco. I think that, like, some of these, while these teams are really good, I think there's people on the committee that are going to start to ding them a little bit. Like, well, they didn't win on the road. They didn't win on the road. And, you know, when you look at teams like Purdue and Mini, do you even put them in?
Well, it's tough with those overall records being 12-10, 11-10 now. That's they got to get better than that. If you're one game over 500 overall, it's going to be a stretch. Tytel, can you see that happening in the Big Ten this year? A team that's two games over 500 maybe getting a tournament bid just because of how strong this conference is, though.
Yes, it would need to be an exceptional circumstance. I think keeping the Wisconsin example, if they start sliding, obviously 6-5, it's not like they're trending way north, but if they finish just a couple games over 500, they would need Michigan State and probably another big scalp on their resume just to get in. I don't think 12 are getting in. I think 10 is legit, though, which is amazing.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're a team like Purdue or Minnesota where your overall record is either one game or two games above 500, that's where you really want to start getting some separation from the rest of the muck.
Yeah. And those are the two teams that really have the most work to do here. But we've got a lot of big games. Dave. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, well, just one more quick thought. There were a lot of great games, but if you haven't seen the video of Illinois and Iowa shaking hands after the game, you need to go find that on Twitter or YouTube. It's just Fran McCaffrey being Fran McCaffrey, and it is great.
The Illinois assistant coach is going at him a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And he went and he turned around, walked away. It was rad. Big week this week. Huge games, including for my Rutgers Scarlet Knights. I mean, probably over their heads at Maryland, but they pick up that win. I think that any questions you have about that resume are completely gone at this point.
I agree with that. And I am not as big. I mean, I like this Maryland team a lot. I don't think they're protected seed good, largely because they have struggled on the road. Oh, they did get a nice one in Indiana. But, that is – I mean, that's the kind of game that it's like you go from, you know, skirting the bubble to being way, way, way in on the first ballot if Rutgers can get that one.
And of course, the other big game to come up here Tuesday night is the biggest rivalry in the Big Ten, the Ohio State-Michigan. So I think we should go back to our rivalry checker. No?
Yeah, we got a couple. Michigan State-Michigan also on Saturday. But, like, so here's the rivalry checker. And it's
Ohio State and Michigan. Let's find out.
At Ohio State and Michigan, and then you run it through. The two are 8 miles apart.
And they've never played the
NCAA tournament. And they've never met in the NCAA tournament.
That's actually false.
I think it might be true. Didn't they have to vacate that game?
Probably. I guess it is true.
It's remarkable. Like I knew it was a rivalry, but I didn't realize. Wow.
Yeah, we've got other big game. I mean, I think we should honestly though circle every single game on this.
I think account. That'll be good news for our colleague Kyle Lamb, who can now pretend that 1992 never happened.
Yeah, but big week of rivalry. You know, Whiskey Mini for Paul Bunyan's ex, the basketball virgin. Nebraska Iowa, kind of a big rival. I mean, Indiana Purdue. Yeah, this really is a. I mean, at least.
I'm fascinated by that Ohio State Wisconsin game Sunday. I think that's another really good one here, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of good ones. Let's Penn State, Michigan State tomorrow night. I just skipped over that. Yeah. That's just a matchup of, you know, the team ranked 15th in the nation.
Yeah.
Two top 25 teams. Come on.
Right.
Let's go over to the SEC. We had that up on the screen, and I have no idea where to go next, so let's go there. And LSU, I don't know why I have the Big 12 SEC standing still on the screen. They should have been going by now, but ignore those. Yeah. That was a couple weeks ago. But LSU, Tytel, now 8-0 on the season, just in conference play, and maybe still not quite the best team. They're actually third in terms of the coach rankings here, but two-game lead in the conference.
Amazing. You talk about Coach Will Wade. I thought that his career was over this time last year, and obviously he's back with a vengeance. The team is playing great. They lost so much from last year's Sweet 16 team. Really impressive that they're doing it. I don't know if they can hold off the Auburns and Kentuckys of the world. Obviously, beating Bama and Ole Miss is nice, but I think there's a whole nother level up, and he'll get his chances. But 8-0 is 8-0, so kudos to the Tigers.
Kudos to the Tigers, and of course, David, Auburn gets the – gets a big, big piece in their on their resume this week with the win. It's a home win, but it was over Kentucky.
Yeah, that checked a huge box that needed checking because they had been basically beaten no one above the level of the NIT, home, road, or anywhere else. And for them to get that one, even though it was at home, Kentucky has played well on the road this year, so that they should get a lot of credit for that. And you know, I've been beating up Auburn all season long, but not so much now. I mean, that again, it was another win that kind of changed, in my opinion, at least to me, the complexion of the team. And you know, they got more coming up. They had a schedule that was a little bit backloaded, and they're getting into that stretch to where is this a top 15 team or a top 10 team or not? We'll see.
Well, Rocco, I want to ask you about one other team here that had a really good week, and that's Mississippi State. I want to pull their profile up actually as we address them, because this is a team that is suddenly right there. Are they not?
Yeah, they're right there. I've got them in my first four, in the first four as of today's bracket, and they've won five of their last six. The only loss was to Oklahoma by one, a game that came right down to the last possession, of course. And it's an interesting story. They've had to crawl out of a big hole. They lost at home to Louisiana Tech. They lost in Jackson, Mississippi against New Mexico State. And then they started SEC play 0-3. So most of us, I think everybody here, wrote them off. And then they come out, they take care of a hot Georgia team at the time by over 30 points. They take care of an Arkansas team that most people have in the field. And then they go to Florida last week, and then they win at home convincingly against a Tennessee team that's still hanging around. So really impressive. They're not just beating teams like the bottom of the league. They're beating a mid to high level SEC teams, and they're now becoming a contender for an SEC title.
Yeah, and let's take a look, Sleek, at the week ahead here in the SEC, which includes a very big game coming up here, again, Tuesday night, tomorrow night, Mississippi State at Kentucky now.
Yeah, Mississippi State is certainly going to have probably their biggest opportunity of the regular season so far, and then you look at some other rivalry games like Georgia, Florida. That's one the Gators cannot overlook. LSU right. and Auburn is also going to be huge on Saturday. I'm less bullish on Kentucky and Tennessee because I think the Vols are a team that's completely tanked to the point where they're probably NIT right now.
Yeah, but they're even that. They're going to have to hold on just to get to that.
David, Georgia and Florida is a big rivalry, and I think we need to run
the cocktail rivalry. You know, this is football rivalry here, but big in basketball too. So here we go, like as we plug it into the rivalry checker. Wow.
8 miles apart. I've never made the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, the two schools are 8 miles apart. I didn't realize Gainesville and Athens were that close.
The computer never lies. It's all a formula here, so
yeah,
that's got to be right. let's go to the Big 12. As we recorded this, we're recording this around coming on 10 o'clock p.m. here on Monday evening. So Baylor is up 5 at halftime over Kansas State as we record this, and Texas only up 1 is down 1 at Kansas late in the first half as well. So potentially pretty big upsets if they hold. But other than that, we had a good week for Texas Tech that we already mentioned with the West Virginia win, even though they did lose the Kansas game. And
yeah, sorry, Dave, but I was just going to echo that. Like, I mean, Texas Tech. Kansas, they were sort of swinging for the moon, but they fell behind, and I was impressed with how they battled in that. And one of the things, it's like, you just wish they wouldn't have scheduled so weak out of conference the way that they did. But
Tytel, I want to ask you about this Oklahoma team, though. I want to pull their profile up here, because the loss to Kansas State, a real head scratcher for a team that I cannot spell correctly. It's going to give me an error message here for a second, but a head scratcher for a team that was looking like an NCAA tournament team pretty solidly a couple weeks ago, at least.
Yes, we can lose the solidly. I had them at the 10th seed on Sunday when I posted my most recent bracket, and they're certainly about to go down, down, down with West Virginia, Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia coming up in the month ahead. It's going to be a long February for the Sooners, but obviously Minnesota win looking decent. At Texas by 10 looking very good, and not a lot of badness in the middle there. A bit of a home court hero with 2-5 on the road, but certainly plenty of chances to recover. If they just win one of those four against the top 10 net teams, they're right back in it. I don't think they're going to win many of those four against the top 10.
But don't forget, they got Texas Tech twice on the schedule as well, on top of all that. So this is one of the toughest schedules left in the nation, Russell, I think, when you look at this.
Yeah, and if they win out against that, I think they'll be inside the bubble. Yeah.
I mean, you can look at a tough schedule two ways. You can look at it as, murderer's row, which it is, but you can also look at it as opportunity, and there's a lot of opportunity for them to solidify themselves. So it's sometimes a much better position to be in than not having any chances and nowhere to go but down. So
right.
See if the Sooners can capitalize.
Right. I mean, maybe not that tough, but wow.
The upcoming schedule, you mentioned two games going on tonight as we record this. A few other games to note here is the West Virginia at Oklahoma game.
Chad, I'd like to talk about a rivalry we used to have in this conference that we don't anymore, that used to be this week. And I believe we have a countdown clock going here because it is coming back. Can we get this on the – where's my clock?
Oh, we have the countdown clock going here.
Let's see
if we can find the countdown clock.
Hard to do with no arms. Here we go. Oh, see, there it is. I mean, the border war resumes in 312 days. You all laugh. You all say that I should be buzzed. But if you do not think people in Kansas City are ready for this game, I have some video from last night. And this is just the reaction 312 days before the border war. Are these people excited or what? They are ready for this rivalry to resume.
I think we got to throw David off this podcast. I honestly do. David.
What?
There's a little bigger news in Missouri, or maybe Kansas, depending on which city you think this team is in yesterday. yesterday. And I don't think it was the border war.
No, I mean, I think that's what it's coming back.
Can we just go on? Let's go back to the standings. Let's talk some Pac-12. And Tytel, this was actually a big week for your team here, Arizona, who had zero road wins going into the week, and now has two.
Yes, although a big asterisk. I mean, Rocco, can we admit that if Kwadi Green is playing, that there's no way that Arizona wins that game?
Well, there would have been a guy out there that could actually dribble the ball at the end. I can tell you that. I was actually at the game, and Huskies are still fighting in every game and finding a way to lose in the end of every game. It's just it's as gut-wrenching as you could ask. It's pretty bad when you lose every game and your KenPom rating doesn't change. That means they're playing very well. They're just not finding a way to win. It's ugly out there.
Stalika, we also the other game of note this week was Stanford picked up the huge home win over Oregon, a Stanford team that may have been starting to fade before that game too.
Yeah, Stanford gets a 1-1 week right here. I mean, yes, it's nice that they at least get a win against a tournament caliber team against Oregon, but when you lose at home to Oregon State, that's going to at least drown their sails a little bit right here. They had a similar week in L.A. where they at least took care of their business against UCLA, but they collapse against USC, so in some respects, some similarities, but the Cardinal, they're really going to need to start sweeping some of their two-game series here coming up.
Well, speaking of another team that had a very strange 1-1 week, and I think that we have Joby Fortson in with us now as well. Joby, I wanted to ask you about Colorado. Losing to UCLA, but then picking up a huge road win at USC this week.
I actually thought after Colorado lost to UCLA, we might be seeing, the Buffs potentially being that team that is safely in the field and then just starts to sink, and can they sink low enough? Because you lose to UCLA, that's this season, that's saying something. But then they go out and they just dismantled a tournament caliber USC team, and it wasn't close. I mean, it was that 20-point difference was what it was the entire game. And so it was Colorado's back. I would assume that it says, hey, UCLA has actually improved more than it is and Colorado had an anomaly more than danger sign for Colorado. I think Colorado is right where pretty much they were at the beginning of the week in all of our eyes.
I'll tell you what, UCLA was very impressive against Utah as well. So I think there might be something to say there.
Right. And God, I didn't realize they were that high in the standings. They're just one game back in the loss column. Now
they are.
Yeah, this is a UCLA team. One of the points I wanted to make about them is that I think they've won 4 out of 5. And while they're probably 100 miles outside the tournament, they're a lot better now than they were back in November. And they're good enough to break stuff. And they sometimes breaking stuff can be fun when you've already played your way out. But, no, it would have to – I still don't think they get in, but this is a team that can make a lot of noise between now and the end and maybe make some noise in the conference tournament too.
This is how bad UCLA's present situation is. After those two wins, my rating actually has them the highest at 93.
Yeah. they're not at silver. The tournament team, I think,
was arguing that. Way from 47-48, which is what you need to be.
But this upcoming week is an interesting one, especially for, once again, Titelli, your team hosting the USC-UCLA team, as is Arizona State, the same two games this week. I think a fascinating game.
Well, luckily, we know that we can win at home, and now that we finally won on the road, I can breathe a little bit more. Joby has told me for a month that the JNG devalued Arizona because they didn't have a road win. Now they do, and they're in the top 30. Joby doesn't lie.
Yes, he does.
Sean Miller does not lose to Mick Cronin, so I'm going to get the popcorn for that Saturday matchup.
The pals are together again. I forgot about
That is, when that rivalry is good, the Pac-12 is good. So, I mean, that's a good rivalry to the UCLA-Arizona. In fact, let's double check on that one.
Yeah. Let's pull this up. I didn't.
UCLA and Arizona, a few facts about them that not people, many people know. They are 8 miles apart and have never met.
Yeah. Joby, this is Joby seeing the Hoops HD rivalry checker for the first time. We've been plugging ever since we started with Duke in North Carolina, and we've just been checking rivalry.
We've also got Oregon State, Stanford, Colorado, a fascinating game on Saturday here between two and caliber teams, as well as Washington State, another rivalry game on Sunday.
Yeah, but let's jump still over not to David's favorite Civil War, Oregon.
Let's jump over to the Big East, which has now, I believe, 4 teams in the top 25. Marquette just missing it, but
I still don't understand how Marquette isn't ranked.
We talked about Xavier at the top of the show a little bit. They're already Stalico, but let me bring you back in again. Did lose the home game to Marquette, but only by 2 points. But still, Musketeers definitely heading in the right direction. What about the rest of the conference, though?
This would be the exact opposite of the Big Ten right here, because there were only 2 home teams that actually won all week in 9 games. And in both cases, they involved DePaul actually getting second half leads and being unable to hang on, because that would have given the Blue Demons some much needed momentum themselves right here. Because Creighton getting the win at Villanova, that's going to vault the Blue Jays into protected seed territory themselves. And that was also their first win in Philly since the Doug McDermott days.
Rocco, let me ask you also, Georgetown, big comeback to win at St. John's on Sunday. Is there still life in this Georgetown team?
That was a stunner. I mean, no Mac McClung on the court, and they found a way to get it done down by 17 in the Garden. And the last time they played without McClung, Providence punched him in the face right off the start of the game. They lost by 30. I thought that was happening again, so I almost wrote him off. I think I was only watching Iowa-Illinois the whole comeback, and then I finally saw the last minute. But yeah, that was very impressive. And I'm sure the committee could also take that into consideration. These games without McClung, he makes a massive difference. And of course, in a league like this, Georgetown's got nothing but opportunity ahead every single time out. And I've got their resume, you know, pretty much in most years you would see the bubble start to get weak around this time of year. I still think it's fairly strong at this point. I don't have Georgetown in quite yet, but I think you could make a case for them to be in. And that's a good sign for the Hoyas.
And it's a real interesting week ahead here also. Titel, we've got Wednesday, we've got a huge Villanova-Butler game. We also got Seton Hall-Villanova on Saturday. Big, big week for Villanova.
Oh, that's actually. Yeah.
For everybody, and just to echo Rocco's point, I mean, this is a team, like, I think with five starters, I think the bench is made up of, like, chewing gum, tinfoil, and, like,
exactly.
I don't know how they're doing it. Yeah. But we've joked about Georgetown's schedule so much in the past. 11th in the nation. Kudos, Coach Ewing. Obviously, he's lost nine of them, but he's scheduling tough teams.
Let's head back out west a little bit here. And Joby, I want to talk to you about the lone remaining undefeated team in the nation here, San Diego State. Picked up a couple more wins, a win at the Pit, which is never easy to win.
Wait a minute.
Home win over Utah State. But before we go any further, yes, we're talking about west. We got to remember that the conference is brought to you by the ConExpo Con AGG 2020. March 10th through 14th at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. Just look at these pictures. What an event it is.
I mean, I can't wait for this one.
but Joby, San Diego State got probably two of their toughest wins that they had left in their season this week.
Yeah.
They got New Mexico and then the home game over Utah State.
Yeah, the Utah State game. Utah State had them. Utah State gave a big scare to them. I mean, I thought at one point that Utah State actually might be able to pull it out. Now, at the end of the day, San Diego State pulled away at the end, but that score is very misleading if you were paying attention to the game. Utah State showed well, and Utah State, we'll get to them, showed why we probably can't dismiss them for March completely. But San Diego State, they're on their way to being – I mean, where are they going to lose? At Wyoming, who's awful, but hey – it's a tough home environment.
They got a game at Nevada left. They got a game at Boise left. Those are the two most dangerous ones.
And Boise,
then maybe a Utah State the third time in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
But right now, I mean, whether you believe they're a number one seed in quality or not, when I think they are very good, they're going to be a number one seed if that zero stays.
Yeah, they will be.
And Rocco, I think you want to discuss a little bit about New Mexico's other game this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jaquan Lyle, you know, he's had a crazy path in his college career, in and out of trouble. Didn't make the trip to Fresno. On the same day of the game, he threw a party. There ends up being a shooting at the party and all sorts of trouble. So I would not expect him on the court. He actually just got out of a court issue earlier this year when he missed, I think, four or five games, and he is just starting to come back. So disarray happening in Albuquerque.
And the upcoming schedule here in the Mountain West, San Diego State, they're one game inside Air Force this week, so they should be undefeated again next week. But let's talk about, Rocco, you mentioned players that might not be playing this week. Another conference with a team that's not going to be with a player that's not going to be playing this week is over in the American. where we had one of the most, you know, every now and then you think you've seen it all. And then in the Cincinnati-Houston game on Saturday, which was a big upset win by Cincinnati at home, we had – well, Titel, let me ask you what we had here.
Well, Raftery would call that a smooch. I think that there were some teeth involved in a bite. Mm. And Coach Sampson at first said, no, you guys are crazy. And then he came in to come out the next day and say, no, I saw a different replay. You guys are right. Inexcusable, obviously, and this is your starting point guard in a 2-point loss that could cost you like a seed line, maybe even a bubble line. Like, I don't know what the kid was thinking.
I just don't even understand this, quite honestly. I mean, why would you bite another player? Was the pregame meal that bad? I mean, but
Chad. So yeah. I think I have to correct David Griggs. Earlier in the show tonight, he said there's no more rivalries in college basketball. I would strongly just recommend watching the American Conference. I mean, you had it all this weekend. The Tulsa-Wichita State game was unbelievable. Probably the story of the weekend, maybe the season, with Joyner hitting an off balance.
Incredible shot.
Probably 27, 28 foot three. And it, the first time his biological dad had ever seen him play. And just tears, raw emotion at the press conference. Just gave you goosebumps watching it. Tulsa, of course, just becoming, I know we've been laughing about them all year, but it's the story of the American Conference. And they're just on the biggest streak. And I think a lot of it has to do with, it's kind of strange to give Frank Haith credit, but what he's done is he realized there's not a lot of very good shooters in this league. It's a very defensive-minded league. And so he's put in a very complex matchup zone. And a lot of teams are having a hard time adjusting. You're seeing a lot of poor shooting performances against Tulsa, and they're finding a way to eke out these victories. So kudos to Coach Haith. Kudos to Mr. Joyner. Great story taking place down there in Tulsa.
Now, here's the good news for Tulsa right here. They've already beaten like three of the big wigs in the league at home in Houston, Wichita State, and Memphis. They're not going to get a return game against Cincinnati because they've already lost that one and only play them once. So when you look at their schedule right here, at Houston February 19, at Wichita on March 8, they don't go to Memphis, so their opportunities are going to be limited because they're still miles away from the NCAA tournament, but they've certainly taken a big leap in the past couple weeks.
I dare say if they win the regular season title in the American, they're in the NCAA tournament. Now that you point out.
You're four loss, Joby, come on.
At Wichita State, at Houston. But Tulsa was the surprise, what was it, in 15 or 16, when everybody had Tulsa out, and because they had lost to a non-D1 team, and they magically got a bid. I mean, it's not like Tulsa's an ignored team by the committee, different committee members, but you win the American, you know, regular season, especially non-tied, they're going to be in, even if that is a three-loss, you know, American.
I think that was 2016 because Michigan actually beat them in Dayton that year.
Another rivalry game, too, that happened over the week. Two teams that really have nothing to do with the bubble, Central Florida, South Florida. I don't know if you guys saw that game. It was crazy in there. Sold out. The teams got after each other. Came down to the last possession. I mean, I'm telling you, the Americans got some exciting games, guys.
They've had some exciting games. We've got a real interesting week ahead as well, including circle this game on Sunday, Wichita State at Houston. New budding rivalry in the conference, but I think we should do a quick rivalry checker of that one here. Wichita State and Houston. These two teams, David, pretty far apart, though, I think, right? Did we lose David? I think we lost David. Stalika, they're 8 miles apart. Have never been in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, starting to notice a little bit of a trend right here.
I think we lost David for some reason, which makes this podcast a lot better. that's maybe the beeping that we were hearing on the screen. So let's run through. We've got a couple conferences left. Let's quickly go through the Atlantic 10 next. In the Atlantic 10 this week, we saw Dayton, who is, you know, the top team in the conference, struggled with Duquesne and then took care of Fordham. But maybe the other story is the Rams. And I know there's three of them, but Joe, let's talk about the ones from Rhode Island.
Yeah. Big win over the Rams from VCU, the Friday night game. It was a really, it was a really good game by Rhode Island. They were the better team throughout, but it was not like VCU didn't show up. And so Rhode Island, I think, as of today, is clearly on the correct side of the bubble. I've said it in past podcasts. There will be two bids out of the A-10. And maybe three if you have a surprise champion. It's just who's going to be the team among Rhode Island, Richmond, VCU, you might want to throw St. Louis in there. Who is going to be the one that beats the others? Rhode Island, this week, took that step to being that team. Keep an eye on Rhode Island in as a potential NCAA tournament team because of the events of this week.
Let's take a look at the week ahead here. Stalika, coming up this week, you want to look at the two teams you want to look at are Dayton, who is playing St. Louis in
the Arch Baron Cup.
Round two of the Great Arch Baron Cup. And Rhode Island's got a home game at UMass at Titel. I think you're going to be there Saturday at GW.
As a spectator of all things, I have a friend who's got a bunch of group tickets, and rather than go watch the sorry ass to Paul Georgetown game, I figured this is the best game in DC this week. And I can't wait to see these Rams because, as Joby said, they are on fire.
I think, unfortunately, we have David Griggs back.
Yes, you cut my internet out. You went out. So anyway, I heard Joby talking about Rhode Island, and of course I'd like to talk about Rhode Island. What did he say? I disagree.
We've already moved off from Rhode Island, David, but if you want to talk about Gonzaga, let's go West Coast Conference.
David, it's squeezed between Massachusetts and Connecticut.
It is. Oh, but how far is, I mean, can we check that? How far is it from Massachusetts?
We're not going to check that. Massachusetts and Rhode Island is not a rivalry. Okay. But Hawaii and Maine might be. But yeah. David, the West Coast Conference, the Zags, number two in the nation now, and they've actually – Baylor actually increased the lead over them this week, despite the fact that the Zags won two more games, although they struggled at San Francisco a little bit.
Well, struggled at San Francisco, big asterisk in that game, Killian Tilly not playing. Right. Fortunately, it is not a season-ending injury. We were actually recording a show when that happened, and on camera, I thought it was his knee. I didn't realize it was his ankle. It's still a bad injury, but I'll say this. Yeah, Gonzaga did get the win, and it was on the road, and it was shorthanded, and it was against a team that's pretty good, and that was way, 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 way up for this game. So while they didn't blow them out, they fell behind, they battled, and they got the win in a really hostile environment that was geeked for the game.
The other big game, of course, was the BYU-St. Mary's game. Rocco, you're in the St. Mary's vicinity, I believe, and you know, they couldn't quite pull out that win at BYU.
No, and they had the lead almost the entire second half. It came down, of course, to that gutsy long three by TJ Haas. And if you look at just TJ Haas by himself, he hit the gutsy three to beat Houston on the road too. If you take those two wins away from BYU, what do you have left? Probably not a good enough resume, or maybe right on the cut line. So, I mean, he's literally carried them from away from the cut line up to 9-8, even maybe 7-seed, depending on where you look. But incredible BYU team. I mean, their metrics are amazing. They're the fourth best field goal percentage team in the nation, and the I believe the sixth best three-point shooting team. They just got shooters all over the court. I think they're a dangerous team if they can carry this out and get to the field, don't have any major slip-ups against the loyal Marymount Pepperdines of the world. Heck of a game, great environment in Provo, and St. Mary's will be fine. They're playing well as well.
Well, so, Tytel, with one more Gonzaga St. Mary's and one more Gonzaga BYU game left at this point, I believe. Or does Gonzaga have two more with St. Mary's? They may have
played St. Mary's. Yeah, they're coming on Saturday.
Yeah, is this a three-bid conference?
Absolutely.
It could be. I think that the top three need to beat up on everybody else, and it would be great if two or three can upset one somehow. But if you go into BYU's schedule just real quick, as Rocco said, like, their metrics are great, but it's, you have to look a little deeper. So they have seven losses, which is not that impressive, I understand. Yeah. If you look at them closely, three of them are to three potential number one seeds in San Diego State, Kansas, and Gonzaga. Three of them are on the road in overtime by single digits. Mm-hmm. And the seventh is to San Francisco on the road by 1 point. I'm not saying that they're this close to being undefeated, but I can explain away each of their seven losses. As Joby reminds us all the time, you still have to win the games, but they have explainable losses, which I think is a nice touch that the committee will respect.
And they have won games. That's what's great.
Yeah. Thanks to TJ Haas.
Look at Virginia Tech. That's a nice neutral court win.
Right. And a very favorable schedule, though, here. With other than the Gonzaga home game, everything is a game either on the road that against a bad team or a home game against a team that you should be able to beat at home.
Yeah, I agree. They could win, with the exception of Gonzaga, they should win out against that. And if they do that, if they hold serve the rest of the way, I think they're in. I think both teams are inside the bubble already, them and SMC. So,
agree 100%.
I think they got a decent shot to beat Gonzaga at home, too. The shooters they have.
The St. Mary's question is a little bit different, though, because they do have the Zags twice to go here still. So that makes the rest of their schedule a little more difficult. Could be two more losses as opposed to one more.
Yeah.
Unless they could pick up one of those wins, which if they could split with Gonzaga, that's that kind of locks them into the field. Real quick, the upcoming schedule here for the week in the West Coast Conference. We've got the the big one is Saturday, of course, Gonzaga at St. Mary's. Tytel, what do you think? Can the Gales beat the Zags?
They can, especially if Tilly is hurt. But the Zags, I mean, Mark Few, like, how is he not in the Hall of Fame? All he does is do it every year. And the funny thing for the Gales, can you imagine if they miss the bubble by losing a quadrupler?
The Pacific game, yeah. That's the problem with the Gales profile. I don't know if I had it up on the screen or not. I think I did. But when you look at their losses, unlike BYU's that you can explain away, Pacific, Santa Clara, and Winthrop, it's hard to explain those away.
Hey, Winthrop's starting to get a lot better. They were at 190 at one point. They're almost to 100 now because they're 10-0 in the Big South.
Yeah, and they're running away with it.
And Santa Clara was in about the 50s, and they're now at 99. So, but I guess on that note, let me go ahead and pull this down here, and we'll run through everybody for some final thoughts. I think that's where we're at. Sleek, I think we have you back. Why don't I start with you?
Yeah, if you could kindly pull up the team sheets here, because I think we're going to be seeing an interesting debate coming up here over the next couple weeks. Normally, we talk about shipping teams from the east out towards the west region, but this year, we're actually going to be talking about two teams vying for the number one seed out west and possibly shipping them out east. So if you could kindly pull up the sheets for Gonzaga and San Diego State. This was obviously not my turn doing the bracket this week, but when I was building my own seed list yesterday, I'm starting to come around a little bit more on San Diego State's resume, especially in light of Creighton and Iowa. Keep in mind, this was the Las Vegas Invitational where the Aztecs had beaten both the Blue Jays rather decisively and also Iowa. And when you combine that with a road win at BYU and also Utah State, I think that's going to be a little bit better than what Gonzaga has. But the other rub is San Diego State's not going to have too many other cracks at quality games like Gonzaga, where you at least get road trips to St. Mary's and BYU. So this is going to be, I think, one of the better debates that we'll have during our Hoops HD selection committee in the next month.
Yeah, and I think you're right, though, dead on there, that the thing that's going to may differentiate them is the balance of the schedule, because if Gonzaga wins out, they will at that point be clearly above San Diego State with the wins at St. Mary's and BYU. Let's go ahead and pull this back down again. And Joby, let me head to you next.
Yeah, start really paying. I'm going to kind of repeat what I said last week because it's coming very much to the fore. Pull up the Big Ten standings, and you can see the overall records of some of these teams. I mean, if Wisconsin, who has a NCAA tournament resume without a doubt, but if they lose their last game to Michigan State, they're only two games above 500. And that is questionable time for the NCAA tournament. There are a lot of these records, like Purdue, Minnesota. Like I said, Wisconsin is not out of the woods yet. Michigan. Those teams, if they go on little losing streaks, or in the case of Purdue and Minnesota, they just only go 500. They're out based on overall record despite metrics. If you look at Kimbaum, the predictive, the BPI, they're all 15s, 20s, the net, obviously, they're all top 50. There are going to be some teams missing out who are very good just because when two teams play, someone's got to win, someone's got to lose, and the Big Ten might have 12 NCAA-caliber teams. They won't be getting 12 because the schedule itself and the fact they have to play each other will not allow for it.
Hey, while I got this up here, Tytel, let me head over to you next.
So I wanted to talk some ACC real quick. So everybody knows that the best coach in Clemson, South Carolina, is a little guy named Dabo Swinney. What you might not know is the amazing January that Coach Brad Brunell had for the Tigers. So he ominously finished December horribly, losing at home to Yale and Miami, and I thought that the season was done. All he does is come back in January, and he's got to face three of the best coaches in the history of the sport. The three coaches who are the active win leaders in the sport, Krzyzewski at Duke, Boeheim at Syracuse, Williams at North Carolina. What did he do? 3-0 against the three leading coaches in the sport. I don't think they're going to make the tournament, but Brad Brownell is having the best month in Clemson, South Carolina.
There you go. Rocco.
Yeah, so Memphis is a team that's sliding, as we all know, and they're of course, in serious danger of losing their place in the bracket. They got even worse news after surviving two close calls this past week when they found out that DJ Jeffries came down with a knee injury, one of their key players, and he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, potentially could lead him right up to the American tournament or beyond. So this is a real gut check time for Penny Hardaway in Memphis, if it wasn't already. And now with a thin roster, it's just kind of crazy to think back of all the talent that they acquired during the last offseason. And now without Jeffries or Wiseman.
Acquired.
So we shall see. But, hey, I'm heavy on the American tonight, and I wanted to talk about one more American team. So that's my final thought.
All right. Rocco, the champion of the American. Let me, Captain American. No, David, let me let you finish the show off.
Okay, yeah, continuing to keep an eye on teams that are outside the bubble but playing better and maybe even playing like tournament caliber teams, even if their resumes aren't quite there yet. I think one is obviously in the American. You cut my internet, so I didn't hear what you all said about Tulsa, but having a really good month. Cincinnati, another one. Cincinnati, I think, has won 6 of the last 7. They just beat Houston. They came from behind to do it after a rather bizarre play. I'm sure you all talked about that, so I won't mention it again. But two American teams, the question is there enough season left for their resumes to get where they need to be in order for them to get inside the bubble? In the SEC, I still kind of like this Alabama team. I know that they've kind of stepped back a little bit, but all in all, they've – since January have played like a tournament team. And I don't know. Those are the three that kind of come to mind right now. Xavier. How about Xavier?
I think you were here when we talked about Xavier, David, but yeah. On that note, I would note also coming up this Saturday, the NCAA is going to issue their preview field sweet 16 or preview field top 16
protected seeds,
whatever you want to call them. But that's going to be coming up on Saturday, so we'll get an idea of what the selection committee is actually thinking versus what people like us are telling you that they're thinking. Of course, they're going to be wrong and we're going to be right. But I do want to thank everyone for joining us. So on behalf of Rocco Miller, John Titel, Joby Fortson, David Griggs, John Stalika is somewhere around, I think. Yeah. We lost him. But I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.